Welcome to the Aporia podcast. Remember, you can listen to this podcast on all the major platforms. If you like the show, you'll love the Aporia magazine. Find the link in the show notes, along with our Twitter and a link to the bonus questions we ask our guests.
Hello, welcome to the Aporia podcast. I'm Noah Carl, and joining me today is Wilfred Riley. He is a professor of political science at Kentucky State University and the author of Hate Crime Hoax and Taboo, 10 Facts You Can't Talk About. Wilfred, let me start by wishing you a happy birthday.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, that is that day. I'm just over the 40 line, actually, so I don't know how, you know, thrilled I'm supposed to be, but in practice, that doesn't matter to me at all. I'm looking forward to, you know, having a good day with friends and all that.
Good stuff. Okay, so you're here to talk about the cultural theory of racial IQ gaps. Could you outline what that is?
Yes. So obviously, and I assume almost everyone listening to the Aporia podcast would know this, but there is currently a dispute that's been defined, for example, as the cult crit hered debate about racial gaps in performance, especially as this concerns IQ. The hereditarian perspective. Now, it's actually kind of interesting to attempt to define who the people in the different camps are. I mean, as I understand, there's some dispute about what makes you a hereditarian, and I've been accused of being one. Let's suppose I reject the title, and people like Kevin Byrd have been sort of forcibly thrust into that camp. But a hereditarian believes that the racial IQ gap in the USA, which is currently, I believe, going with Murray 2020, it's 91 is the mean score for African-Americans, 93 for Hispanics, 103, you might correct that for whites, 107 or something for Asians. Hereditarians believe that this is largely a 50%+, let's say, genetic in origin. Culturalists believe that there are practices such as study and training time, to give a very obvious one, that account for most, if not all, of this gap. And the critical position I don't take especially seriously, but this would be, say, Ibram Kendi, for example, Robin DiAngelo. The argument would be that any gap in performance between large racial or ethnic groups reflects bigotry somewhere in systems, as the term is usually used. So I'm a culturalist. I think it's fairly obvious that a great deal of this gap, I would say most to all of it, is caused by differences in, you know, learning style, training techniques, so on across groups. And I mean, if you look at groups such as West African immigrants to the USA and UK, for example, who are genetically nearly identical to Black Americans, you'd see performance very similar to that of, in my country, white Americans. So I think there are obvious reasons for that.
Yeah, so before we get to all the evidence that I want to talk about, including the fact or claim that you just mentioned, who are the scholars who are in your camp? Who are the other culturalists?
Well, this is an interesting point. Now, there actually are quite a few. I mean, Tom Sowell, who I sometimes jokingly refer to by titles like the Triple OG, the legendary Black social scientist, is a culturalist. Dick Nisbet is a culturalist. Richard Nisbet. Dickens and Flynn is how this pair would often be referred to. But Jim Flynn and a number of the people he's written with over the years are
culturalists. Well, that's James Flynn of the Flynn Effect.
Well, the Flynn Effect, to give credit where due, as I understand, was actually coined by Charles Murray, who disagreed with Flynn on the most likely disagreed with Flynn as the cause of group IQ gaps, but wanted to recognize a fellow scholar for something he'd discovered, which is the increase in tested IQ, not necessarily G factor IQ, over the decades in essentially every civilized country. I mean, so yes, those would be three prominent examples of people who favor the cultural or the cultural environmental paradigm.
So for people who aren't entirely familiar with this perspective, there are some big names involved. I mean, Riley's a big name, of course, but there are even bigger names like Flynn and Sowell. Mm.
Yeah. But I don't know if I'm a big name of any kind at this point. I mean, I think I'm someone who's writing enough not to get fired at a, you know, decent university. So you gotta put paper out there. But yes, no,
moderate size name.
I'm sorry?
A moderate size name.
Oh yeah, I mean, 6-7 letters. I mean, yeah, it's, you know, a name of some length. Not as much as it could be yet. But one comment I do want to make about the culturalist paradigm is that I think it's fairly homeless right now. There's some moves being made on the Hereditarian side. I don't take the critical stuff very seriously, but they're obviously best-selling books coming out of that camp. Culturalism's been a little quiet for the past 10 years, I think, if we're being honest. And part of that is the question of where the paradigm would be housed. So obviously, I mean, Hereditarianism has generally been associated with men of the center right to right. I think that'd be a fair description of Jensen. I mean, Charles Murray, obviously, is an AEI fellow. There's been a tendency on the U.S. and U.K. right to kind of look at nature as set, almost tragic. It just is what it is. So, I mean, there's a strong tendency among people from that background, at least in my experience, to say, well, a lot of the things that befall humans are simply genetic. Male-female differences would be the obvious example of this. And we're not going to be able to do very much about that. I mean, you see article titles like, can educational outcomes be improved? I'm simplifying a little bit here, but I mean, I think that that's...
just to interrupt, I think Rinderman and colleagues' 2020 survey of intelligence researchers did find that the ones who identified as more conservative were likely to assign a higher proportion of the black-white IQ gap to genes.
I'm not surprised by that at all. But I mean, I guess what I'm saying here, and for some reason I'm rambling a little bit, I don't know, maybe I'm nervous about it. But anyway, but the Hereditarian perspective has often been associated with the right. The critical perspective is associated almost entirely with kind of the growing quote unquote woke left. In fact, the idea that all group gaps are due to some kind of bigotry out there somewhere seems to be becoming almost canonical on the left right now. And the question with culturalism is where that would fall. I mean, traditionally, if you look at Nisbet, it's been a somewhat left-coded perspective. The idea is that there are these group gaps. We need to recognize these group gaps. We need to recognize that tests are very predictive when it comes to workplace outcomes and so on. But it's just obvious that, for example, not having a father in the home or not learning to read for a year or two beyond the point where members of other groups do, that's going to affect your test scoring. It probably doesn't mean very much that the official tested IQ, and I believe Equatorial Guinea, is 59 right now. That's not reflective of the max potential of the population there. But in recent years, the idea on the left, as I just said, has sort of become that you're not supposed to say any of this. If tests reflect, if there's a gap between blacks and whites in test scoring, the reason for that has to be racism. By definition, the test is racist if it's producing this gap. So the idea that there are features of black culture or Appalachian white culture that can be called out and criticized as very likely causal for some of these differences has become extremely unpopular among the people who would be most likely to say it, I think. So that's one of the issues with culturalism. I mean, Flynn in his later essays would still make some very blunt points. I mean, at one point he referred to African-American teen culture as a foolish shopping mall culture, I think the phrase was. And the idea, I don't disagree with that. And the idea was that you'd have to fix that. You'd have to put in the same amount of hours around the study table as Asians or middle-class whites to get anything like, let's say, the same scores. But the number of people willing to say that who are not willing to say things of that kind, who are not right-leaning hereditarians, has been declining. So
it was the case
quite a bit in the culturalist paradigm, but we're seeing a bit less.
So it was the case that culturalists were either from the left disproportionately or at least well represented on both the right and the left. But now it seems it's only people, conservatives and others on the right, who are willing to state that even the basic facts, like that there are gaps of a certain size, maybe the exact magnitude is debated. What do you think is the reason for that?
Well, I think the reason for that is the increasing prevalence of what I call wokeness, well, whatever it calls wokeness, on the political left. I mean, basically. So the culturalist perspective is that there are obvious differences in behavior.
To listen to the full podcast, become a subscriber at aporiamagazine.com.